Welcome to the program. Today on Souls 411, I wanted to really dive into what it's like being a pre-med student at ASU. In the future, I would love to have a pre-health advisor on to talk about all things related to MCAT preparation and course selection for pre-med students. But today, I really wanted to approach the problem from the student perspective. And who better to do that with than Michelle Shake, who is a current student in the School of Life Sciences. She's a sophomore majoring in biological sciences with a concentration in biomedical sciences. She also has a double major in global health. She is the community outreach coordinator for a student group on campus that works with pre-health students called Medical Directive, and she is pre-med. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hi, Evan. Thank you so much for having me today.
So let's maybe just start with those two majors. Biomedical sciences is definitely a popular major for pre-med students. I do have some students who sort of bow out of it and either just do, you know, regular biological sciences with no concentration, or even something outside the School of Life Sciences like neuroscience. Usually the stated reason is there's more flexibility in those concentrations and there are fewer hard classes that are absolutely necessary. So maybe you could just start us off by talking about why you chose biomedical sciences. And if you see fit, you could talk about the global health as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So originally, before I was going to start at ASU, like during my senior year, I decided to be a biochem major, but I knew I was going to be on the pre-med track. So I talked to a few of my friends who were seniors at ASU at the time, and they had recommended the biomed degree to me because they felt like it best would prepare me for med school and the MCAT. And I really agree with that. Like, I know the classes like animal phys and cell bio and dev bio and endocrine physiology, like they all get a bad rap, but they really do prepare you for like the MCAT. And also I feel like just kind of the concepts you're going to be introduced to in med school. Like, for example, I just finished up animal physiology and it was like, I actually got to learn about like the human body and its systems, which was really, really cool. And it gave me like, it kind of confirmed my interest, like, okay, I'm interested in these things for my like science degree. And then why I chose global health is I feel like biomed is a little nuanced. Like, I focus on very specific concepts in my classes. Like, for example, in organic chemistry, you're learning specific concepts about chemistry. In animal physiology, you're focusing on a specific body system. But global health kind of gives me like an all-encompassing idea of everything. So, for example, whatever I learn in like my bio classes, I can apply on a bigger level and how it actually impacts people through global health, which was a really, really cool experience. And that's kind of why I decided to have the two majors go hand in hand, because it helps shape my perspective. And that's ultimately also why I chose to do biomed and global health.
So I'm guessing that by the time you decided to do biomedical sciences, you were fully aware that you wanted to be pre-med. How did you arrive at that decision?
So for me, the decision to be pre-med was, it started in high school for me, actually, or in all my life, I should say. I have family in the med field. My dad's a physician. My aunts and uncles are physicians. So I really grew up being very exposed to the med field. I know the ups and downs of it because I grew up with parents in it. But also what really got me to get to where I wanted to be in pre-med was in high school. I did volunteering at St. Joseph's Hospital in Phoenix, and that really exposed me to a lot of things. I got to shadow a doctor. I got to work in the hospital, and that really pulled me in. Like, you get that gut feeling like, oh my God, this is something I should be doing for the rest of my life. And that's that gut feeling that I got. And even funny enough, when we did our career aptitude test in high school, like, everyone else has showed a bunch of different careers. Mine showed like medicine, 95% compatibility or whatever. And then like nothing else after that. So I guess it really was like a decision I made in high school, and I've stuck with it since then.
Yeah, interesting. So it seems like there was at least that one extracurricular experience, the volunteering, that sort of pushed you into it, even though you already had an inclination in that direction. Are there any classes you've taken at ASU that have sort of reaffirmed that passion for medicine? Or, you know, another way to ask that would be, if you were counseling freshmen and sophomores, like, what classes do they need to take, or should they take if they're pre-med, that will sort of tell them like, yeah, this is a good idea, or no, maybe if you don't like this class, pre-med's not the thing for you?
Yeah, there are a few that I'm going to recommend, because I think having a holistic view of medicine is really critical, because then it helps you understand why you want to go into the field, because ultimately you want to, you know, help humanity and all that stuff. But basically, so one class that I would recommend, it's a Barrett class. It's Honors 394. It's high value healthcare. It's taught by the CEO of Mayo Clinic. But why I think that class is so cool is it exposes you to a lot of the nuanced parts of medicine, like the healthcare system, insurance, understanding as a physician where you stand in America, which I think is really, really cool and critical to understand. And then there's two classes which Dr. Compton teaches. I have not taken them yet, but I've heard such amazing things about them that I plan on taking them in the future. I'm sure Evan can explain those better than I can.
Well, yeah, so we were talking earlier about her Bio 394 class, which is called Medicine, Getting In, Being In, Going Beyond. That is a 2-credit iCourse. It's offered pretty much every semester. I believe some are included. It's super popular, and I recommend it to all of my pre-med students, pretty much. You can use it's a 300-level class, so you can use it as upper division elective credit within the major. And then the other one, specifically, if you're pre-med and you're maybe interested in oncology, is her cancer class, which is Bio 302, Cancer, Mother of All Diseases. These classes get a lot of positive feedback, so for pre-med students, I do highly recommend them. So, Michelle, we've sort of talked about the academic side of things, and, you know, pre-med students are fully aware that they need to have a great GPA, awesome MCAT scores, in order to have a fighting chance at getting into medical school. But there are so many other components to a application for medical school that stands out. There are letters of recommendation, there's racking up clinical hours, there's research experience. Now, I know that you actually have worked in a lab on campus as a research assistant. Could you talk about how you got that position and how you've made the most of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So my research kind of journey is a little bit more untraditional. I started working in ASU labs when I was a senior in high school at ASU's biodesign and a biochem lab through my independent research project that I was doing in high school. So that was my first exposure to a lab, and I stayed in that lab till the end of my freshman year. But then also when my sophomore year, I knew I wanted to continue research, and I began to apply to labs. I started researching about specific labs that I was interested in at ASU, and I came across the Center for Health Promotion and Disease Prevention's page, and they have an application for undergraduates that allow you to work in research labs. So that is accepted on like a rolling basis. And basically for that, you just fill out your GPA, your major, just some basic information, what lab you're interested, why you're interested in that lab, why you want to do research. And it's the professors get back to you really quickly and you can start very soon working in a lab. That was how I found the Snugglebug lab that I'm currently in, and I really like it. It's focused on mom and baby research, so it's something that I'm interested in from a global health standpoint. And then the other lab that I'm involved in is the Mayo Clinic Neuro-Oncology Lab. And that lab, I got in a little bit more through connections, but it was previously in the Barrett Digest and also was in another, I think the School of Neurosciences or School of Life Sciences newsletter as well. So that lab I got in through Caleb. He helped kind of introduce me to the coordinator. She interviewed me, and then I was able to start in that lab. I've started working there since November. So that's kind of how I got involved in research. But like the one thing I would recommend is that just be strategic with how you do it. Don't email every single professor on campus. I've cold emailed, and it can be a great strategy, but also sometimes it won't work. And it's perfectly fine to say no, hear no from professors, because that's just going to happen. But what I would say is look for applications specifically. The Center for Health Promotion and Disease Prevention is one I would really, really recommend that students look for, because it is an application. You don't need research experience. That will be your first research experience. And also just keep an eye out for any Barrett students. Look in the Barrett Digest. And any students in general, when you're in your lecture classes, your professors will bring up these opportunities a lot. Like my bio professor last year, she brought up that she wanted students in a research lab. My genetics professor, Dr. Holacek, is very involved in research, and you can get involved in research through her. And also a lot of the other bio professors are very understanding about this matter. And if you go to their office hours and talk to them, chances are you can get involved in a research lab either way. So just be strategic with it.
Yeah, this is Dr. Holacek's great passion in life, is helping students get involved in research. So if you're looking for a research opportunity and you're truly at square one and you're kind of stuck, go talk to her, especially if you've taken her genetics class in the past. Michelle, you mentioned cold emailing. Do you have any specific recommendations for when a student sends a cold email to a professor about seeking a lab position? Maybe you could just tell us sort of what information you included and how you approached that.
Yeah, so based on my cold emailing experiences, I have emailed obviously like my name, my major, my GPA. I've included my resume. You should have a resume when you cold email professors, but also why I would be a good asset to their lab and why I'm interested in their research. So when you want to approach a PI or a professor, you should read up on their research. Like Dr. Petrov, who interviewed me for the Snugglebug lab that I talked about, I read through a bunch of her research articles. I knew why I was interested in the lab research that I was interested in. That's what I would recommend, because mainly professors are just looking for students who have a passion and time commitment. Those are the two big things that you need to get into a research lab. Everything else, like the technical skills, it's their job to teach you. But as long as you have those two components, that's what I would recommend in a cold email.
I totally agree with everything you said, Michelle. And I think what you said that was specifically interesting was getting to know their research, and even in the cold email, talking about how your interests relate to their research. I think that's crucially important, both because you're kind of flattering them, but it also, it's like a rather adult thing to do. Not everyone, but most of the people listening to this podcast are going to be between the ages of 18 and 22. And the range of maturity in those ages varies wildly. Some of my students, frankly, are like adolescents, and some of them are adults. And if you write an email where you're including things like a resume, and you're not focusing on what they can do for you, but what you can do for them, that is an adult mentality that I think speaks to the fact that you are going to be, like you said, an asset in their lab, as opposed to someone who kind of needs their hand held and they're going to be teaching. So we've talked about, you know, sort of tips for applying and finding these programs. What about interviewing? What can you tell students who are interested in getting into a lab, who have made it to the interview process? Do you have any best tips and tricks?
Yeah, so I have given a bunch of lab interviews, so this is something that I'm pretty well rehearsed in. I would say, just kind of with the cold emailing, know what your professors are researching in, know what they're passionate about, and then also know how your skills outside of the lab can work well in the lab. Like, for example, what soft skills have you gained from working in different job experiences or just even different clubs you're involved in as a student? Labs all value these skills. You don't necessarily need to be working in a research lab like your whole life to get into one. You just kind of need to have an understanding of how you yourself can apply your skills into the research lab. And I would just say, be confident with, like, as a student, I know that professors look for that. They kind of look for someone who can show good leadership skills, who's curious, who's a little bit more focused. And I think if you show those skills in your interview, that will really help. And also just, just read up on your stuff, make sure that you know what your professor's passionate in. Talk about, you know, how many hours you're willing to dedicate to the lab. I think when you give them a solid time commitment, that is showing leadership and also being very assertive as a student that you are determined to do well in this lab. Like, and be honest about it. You can say, like, give a range that is realistic with your schedule, because research is often something you can get credit for, but keep in mind you're not going to get paid for most of the time. And it's also something that you're going to do to build your own resume and CV. So keep that in mind. It's, you're taking time out of your own schedule, but also the professor's schedule. So be realistic about how much time you can take out of your day. But basically, with all those tips, just be confident, talk to your professor, know their passions. So that's what I would have to say.
What would you say about sort of dress code for a Zoom interview?
I know why Evan's asking this question. So you always, always make sure you are well-dressed for a Zoom interview. I had an experience where I was wearing like a formal top or whatever, but I did not have formal pants on. And my interviewer asked me to stand up, which was really funny, explaining to them why I had pajama bottoms on. So, and I did not get into that research lab, fun fact. But I would say just dress like how you would dress in person. I know that since we're kind of edging out of a lot of the COVID precautions, that most of your interviews will be in person. But if it is a Zoom interview, just dress well, be as professional as you would be in person, just because that maintains a really good understanding of the professor, of who you are. You want the professor to think, okay, this is a student who's going to work hard, is respectable, takes it seriously. So yeah, that would be my biggest piece of advice.
Yeah, so we've kind of covered the on-campus research experience being a pretty pivotal part in a lot of students' applications when they apply for medical school. What are other non-academic, so extracurricular activities that pre-med students should really be focusing on outside of the research?
So I would say be involved in campus through student orgs or Greek life or whatever you're interested in. I know that a lot of med schools value passion, which has kind of like been a reoccurring theme that I've been talking about. For me, I'm involved in the refugee education and clinic team and medical directive on campus because I'm passionate about these organizations. REACT works specifically with refugee groups and educating them about basic healthcare needs and having a student-run clinic. That is something that I'm very passionate about because I've been wanting to help underserved communities since high school volunteering. So when I was a freshman and I went to Club Fair, that was an organization that I joined, and also medical directive. I became more involved in this year with a leadership position, and why I joined that student org was because I was interested in helping other pre-health students and also wanted to create like a more inclusive community within pre-med. But for extracurriculars, do what you're passionate in. It has to be something you like because you're going to talk about it in your personal statement and in your interviews for med school. So that would be my biggest piece of advice for that.
Yeah, and so you're an officer in medical directive. Why is it important to seek out leadership positions if you're pre-med?
Leadership positions teach you a lot as a pre-med student because when you think about, like, for those of us who want to become physicians, it is a team effort. And as a physician, you are kind of like the leader of your team. So when you build those skills from a young age, it helps you later on in life, is what I've been hearing from a lot of like my family friends who are physicians, or even my parents have said that. But what I have learned as community outreach coordinator for medical directive has been amazing. Like, I've learned how to kind of build other soft skills that I know that will be really important for med school, such as communication, working with other people, learning how to meet deadlines. Like, as community outreach coordinator, I'm responsible for getting most of our guest speakers. So last semester, I coordinated with Dr. Cortez, who is the CEO of Mayo Clinic. I've coordinated with Dr. Roniker, who is a pediatric neurosurgeon at Phoenix Children's Hospital. And through my position, I've learned all these skills that I can bring to the table for med school and also for my life in general, which I think is really important why we should be doing leadership positions. But also, it shows your passion and your interest and that you took it a step further and that you weren't just involved, but you put your time, your effort, and your commitment into it through a leadership position.
Now, what about volunteering, which is another component of medical school applications? How have you gone about finding volunteer experiences, and what are you sort of looking for as far as, you know, this volunteer experience will be productive for me and will interest me?
So for hospital volunteering, I've done it since high school, mainly through St. Joseph's Hospital. A lot of the big hospitals in Arizona, such as St. Joseph's, the Dignity Health Hospitals, so like Mercy Gilbert, Chandler Regional, they're always looking for volunteers. The easiest way is there's always application pages, or you can also just talk to the front desk in person. And more often than not, they will be more than happy to have you work as a volunteer. And what I want to gain from my volunteer experiences is help me reaffirm why I wanted to go into medicine. Because again, at the end of an 8-hour day on a Saturday or Sunday after you volunteered at the hospital, you know, you will know if this career path is right for you. Because if you don't enjoy it, you will not want to be there on a Saturday or Sunday for 8 hours helping people. But it really helps confirm how you want to, like, if you want to be pre-med. And I really enjoy the experiences. And also, you can look for like more unorthodox volunteer opportunities. For me, REACT is kind of my main volunteering opportunity right now, because I get to give back to the community, like the refugee community specifically. So with volunteer experiences, just know what you're getting into, just talk to the front desk or find the application page for the hospital, and you should be all set.
Now, we've sort of touched on your leadership role in medical directive. In that capacity, you're working with a lot of freshmen and sophomores specifically. What is the thing, I know you're only a sophomore yourself, but what is the thing that freshman you really wasn't anticipating about being a pre-health student? Or to put it another way, you know, if you were consulting your former self, what would you like to tell them that you didn't know at the time?
I wish that I had known that it'd be more okay to make mistakes. I feel like pre-med and pre-health in general is kind of set up as this culture of perfection. Like, you need to have perfect grades, perfect MCAT, perfect extracurriculars. Like, perfection is not realistic, and that's totally fine because we're all human and we will all make mistakes. Like, specifically, I remember as a freshman, I was so scared to get like a B or C even on my tests. And it's completely okay to not do well on everything. That's a lesson I kind of had to learn this year with everyone's favorite weed out class, organic chemistry. I did not do good on my first test. Like, I got a 44. And if I had told my freshman self that, I think I would have probably cried and like quit pre-med. But I feel like it's so important to know it's okay to make mistakes and that this is a journey. Not every journey is perfectly uniform. There's going to be ups and downs. And that's one piece of advice I really think that people should keep in mind, is that this is not the easiest major to be in. You know, you are dedicating the next 10 to 12 years of your life to help other people with their health. So that is also important to keep in mind. It's like the time commitment is also something I would say, like, as a first semester freshman, like, you're 18, 19, it doesn't really matter. Like, oh yeah, like, of course I want to be a doctor. But you really want to understand and keep all these things in mind, because you are preparing for a career path that requires additional schooling and requires more additional schooling after the additional schooling. So I would say for my freshman self, I would have told them it's okay to make mistakes and just be more aware of the time commitment that you're getting yourself into.
So would you say that that is the biggest downside to being a pre-med student is simply the intense time commitment it requires. Are there any others?
I would say, yeah, the intense time commitment, but also being pre-med, I feel like it's a little bit of a mental battle sometimes. It's really easy to get caught up in what everyone else is doing, and I'm not doing this, and this person's doing that, and this person's in research, and this person just started a club. You don't need to focus on any of that. Being pre-med, like, I completely have been in this boat this year. There is a little bit of, like, a comparison battle and, like, a mental battle you go through. I would say that's the biggest downside. And also just, like, time away from your friends and family. Like, you hear a lot of med students talk about it, but I didn't expect an undergrad to have to, you know, sacrifice so much time, whether it be to, like, study for a test or volunteer. Sometimes I'm just not doing stuff with my friends, but that's perfectly okay because most of the time you're not really missing out on anything super, super crazy. It's not worth it to have a half experience as opposed to a full experience in what you're dedicated to doing. So I would say just keep that in mind. That's the main downsides of being pre-med is just the time commitment. And also it's a little bit of a mental battle because you are being exposed to really hard classes while being in lab research. So just be prepared for that. And just know at the end of the day, nothing is final. Everything will be okay. There's always a way to go up.
So yeah, speaking of that mental battle, how do you go about taking care of your mental health? Is there anything specific you do?
When it kind of gets to like exam season and just even in general during the semester, it's very stressful. I just try to kind of set aside like one day where I'm not doing any homework. I know that can be really unrealistic, but even half a day to just mentally take a break and not focus on coursework is so essential, I feel like, because you will get burnt out so easily if you are just grinding on your homework 9 a.m. through 9 p.m. Monday through Sunday. Like, it is not realistic. And also, like, make time for your friends. If, like, during the week, you can do, like, small things. Like, I do study dates all the time with my friends, and that's how we catch up and also do our homework together. And if you're more extroverted like me, just, you know, spending time with friends in ways that you can incorporate within your schedule. Like, okay, let's go volunteer. Let's go do this thing together. Like, doing stuff together with pre-med friends is actually a really good bonding experience because, and studying with them too, is because you kind of, it's not just you, you're not going through it alone. And that's what really helps. And that's really helped me this semester and last semester as well. So I would just definitely recommend, you know, taking time out, be with your friends, but find a way to do it that helps your schedule and doesn't like set you back at all.
Yeah, another great reason to join Medical Directive, because I've seen the way that you and Frank and Caleb lead those meetings and you're giving lots of good information about what it's like to be a pre-med student and how one should go about one's business as a pre-med student, but it's also very social. You can tell that you guys are really excited about being there and the students who are coming as members are also excited about it. Last question for you, Michelle. Are you planning on taking a gap year? What do you think of the gap year in general?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I will be taking a gap year. I feel that, especially within the last 10 years, gap year is super common between med school and undergraduate because, one, I feel like I'm going to need a little bit of a break and like a restart from doing so much coursework my 4 years here and then jumping into med school, which has double the amount of coursework that I've heard. I feel like it would just be very unrealistic for me as a person to do that. And I want time off to kind of gain some more life experiences. Like, we are just in our early 20s when we graduate college. I feel like so many times there's this like time race. Like, I want to be this age by the time I become a doctor. Like, it's totally fine to take years off and just work, build your life experiences, travel. I intend to do all that with my gap year and just kind of learn more of who you are as a person because we're also going through that age where it's like self-discovery. And I feel like a gap year will really help me with all those things. And also just, you know, getting to do some stuff that I didn't get time to do in undergrad, such as travel. So yes, I will definitely be taking a gap year. Also, I can study for my MCAT in that year, you know, kind of work more as a scribe. So I'm very excited to take a gap year.
Michelle, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having me.